The Bible. My name is Tom Moore, the gospel preacher for the Park Heights Church of Christ in Hamilton, Texas. And with me tonight, filling in for David, is Terry Jackson, who preaches for the Rising Star Church of Christ in Rising Star, Texas. We want to be sure and remember David Harris in our prayers right now. He is at home, homebound for several weeks, having some difficulty post-transplant difficulties, and so we'd appreciate your prayers on his behalf that he might get back with us very soon. David's very strong in faith and hope, and but he still, everybody needs encouragement, and he'll know that if you're praying for him, that he indeed will be encouraged. We want to remind you that we're airing on KTX 97.7 FM out of Eastland, Texas, KNNK 100.5 FM out of Hereford, Texas, KQMK 1680 AM out of Hydro, Oklahoma, and we're also airing on the Gospel Radio Network. And we want you to remember that this is a live call-in program, and the number to call if you'd like to get in on the discussion with a comment or a question, the number to call is 1-855-QA-BIBLE. That's 1-855-QA-BIBLE. We also want to remind you that if you're listening on the Internet, the Gospel Radio Network, we have a chat room that you can get involved in. If you go to there and you don't see the chat room, just refresh your browser, and you'll see it pop up at the very bottom. And remember that that this is a good way to ask questions or to comment on our program tonight. And we also want to remind you that our motto is and has always been, you have heard what men have said, now listen to what the Bible has to say. We also want to remind you of our sponsors for this program, the Bangs Church of Christ in Bangs, Texas, the De Leon Church of Christ in De Leon, Texas, the Patrick Street Church of Christ in Dublin, Texas, the Rising Star Church of Christ in Rising Star, Texas, the Mount Vernon Church of Christ in Mount Vernon, Texas, the Ninth and Main Church of Christ in San Angelo, Texas, the Windmill Church of Christ located on Ten Top Road in Weatherford, Texas, and also recently, and we're very thankful for the Santo Church of Christ, who is now sponsoring this program, and we're thankful for every one of these sponsors, and we need to realize that this program not only goes throughout various parts of Texas, but thanks to the Internet, we're now able to air the gospel throughout the world. Just the other day, we had someone contact us from New Zealand. Other times, we've had people from Egypt and various parts of the world who have listened in. And so we want you to know that those who sponsor this program have a part in sending the gospel around the world. Again, this is a live call-in talk show, and if you'd like to call in with a question or comment, the number to call is 1-855-QA-BIBLE. You know, the society in which we live is basically a well-meaning people. The people care much for the social ills among us. They care about what happens to people, and there is something out there that is called the social gospel. This is the denominational way of creating social justice through religion, and their goal through this social gospel was to apply Christian ethics to social problems. Now, that seemed like a noble cause, doesn't it? To try to solve the social problems in our world today, sickness and hunger. But the problem with this social gospel is that it allows man to pick and choose which part of any problem they want to address in the name of religion and call it a ministry, and then convince people that they are indeed fulfilling their duty to God, the church, and the world. And well, the social gospel has transformed itself into all kinds of well-meaning organizations. You know, but it seems, though, that sometimes they try to treat religion like a cafeteria. Now, Terry, when we go to a cafeteria, what do?
We pick and choose exactly what we want.
Oh, and so there's a lot of things we live behind, isn't there?
That's right.
Could you eat everything at a cafeteria?
No.
Well, that's what they do with religion. They go through and they pick and choose what they like, and they will focus their efforts in that area and thinking they have fulfilled the will of God. Well, maybe they like taking care of someone who is in need of food, and so they're involved in some kind of effort in sending money to Ethiopia, as I say, and feeding the sick people. That's my ministry. That's what I'm involved in, and I'm doing the will of God, and that is my religion in life. That's what the social gospel is all about.
That's right.
It's trying to set forth ministries, trying to be involved in some social activity, which is good, but what happens is they begin to leave out all of the other things. Where is the teaching of the gospel? Where is the plan of salvation? You know, we have a perfect example of what we're talking about. Last week we talked about how that in Stephenville, from where we're airing today, there was a big push to try to stop underage drinking. And what they're doing here is dealing with the symptoms and not the problem. And everybody would agree we need to stop underage drinking. But underage drinking is not the problem. It is only a symptom of the problem. The real problem is what, Terry?
The real problem is just the use of alcohol, even among all of us.
Exactly right. And so
that's society.
That's what the problem is in this situation. Now, we know, and we looked at last week, various passages and various arguments showing that the use of alcohol is forbidden socially in the Bible. And Terry, remind us of a couple of passages that tell us of the evils of alcohol.
You know, Tom, there's quite a few. There's just a couple of them that I want to refer to. The first one is Proverbs 20 and verse 1. It says, "Wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise." Another one is taken from the 23rd chapter of Proverbs, starting in verse 29. "Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine. Those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things. Your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you'll be like the one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or like the one who lies at the top of the mast, saying, 'They have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake that I may seek another drink?'"
You know, Dougherty said it. Terry, when we look at that passage, that's really telling us a lot of what alcohol does to a person's life, isn't it?
That's right.
You know, we have seen time and time again the ill effects of alcohol in the lives of people. And we don't have to look very far to see that. And isn't it interesting, some of the slogans that we have now, like "Let's drink responsibly."
Yes.
Don't drink and drive. Well, that tells us that alcohol impairs our thinking, does it not?
It almost appears that the advertiser is trying to ease his conscience somewhat by warning people about the dangers that can happen by drinking.
You know, isn't it interesting that, you notice these beer commercials on TV. Have you ever seen an ugly, pot-belly, hairy-nosed man sitting on the back porch of his house drinking some suds saying, "Ain't life great?"
That's right.
What do you see?
Young people.
Nudity. Excitement, and they're painting a picture of something evil to be something very great, and yet there's many, many ills that come as a result of alcohol that we're not being told. Isn't it interesting also that how long ago was it they started taking the cigarette commercials off the television?
Oh, 40 years, 35, 40 years.
Because it's hazardous to our health?
Yeah, yeah.
But what we're going to find out is that there are more people who die through alcohol than tobacco use. And yet, what do we have?
That's right. And you know, Tom, when you think about what the scriptures say about this thing, one of the passages that we had talked about earlier is 1 Thessalonians 5:22.
Mm-hmm.
Abstain from every appearance of evil, mm-hmm. every form of evil.
And so that tells us that if anything even resembles evil,
right.
looks like there could be difficulty with it, then we are to what? Abstain from it. Not to see how close to it we can get, but to get away from it. Isn't there some statistics, Terry, that really gives us an idea of the evil that is associated with alcohol?
There is a lot of statistics. I have some in my hand right now that go back to 1993. Now, I want to say, as we get into this list, Tom, that these statistics go back to 1993. Now, don't you know that since that time, it's worse. It's
yes.
got to be worse. But now listen to this. Even if these numbers are close to being correct today, nationwide there are 97,000 alcohol-related deaths each year. That's almost 8,125 every month. 3 out of 10 traffic deaths are related to alcohol. These are facts. They're statistics that are kept by the different states. So these aren't made up. Look at this. 3 out of 10 homicides, suicide, fire, and drownings are alcohol related. 50% of all violent crimes and 40% of all property crimes in the United States is related to alcohol. There are 18 million problem drinkers in the United States. Not alcoholics necessarily. These are problem drinkers. Alcohol is the number one killer drug in America. And by the way, a side note to that is, alcohol is a drug.
Most definitely.
Just like marijuana or heroin or anything, it is a drug. It is not a food source. Over $117 billion is lost each year in the industry because of loss of time and the cost of treatment and other business-related problems. Yeah, the problem, the cost of alcohol-related problems is $629 per person per year. Now, think about that. Per person. That's enough to build and maintain 2,500 schools. About 50,000, this ought to be a concern, 50,000 babies are born every year with fetal alcohol syndrome, a disease caused retardation, deformity, genetic disorder. You know, the evidence has shown that even social drinking causes birth defects, alcohol, organic brain syndrome, peptic ulcers, heart muscle damage. In fact, when we, years ago, when my youngest son was born and we were taking the Lamaze classes, they told the mothers there, if you drink, stop drinking during your pregnancy. Why? Because it's not good for the baby.
Now, if it's not good for the baby, how good is it for you?
It can't be good for the parent, you know. Because of the genetic predisposition to alcohol problems, many can become totally addicted by consuming only minimal amounts of beer or wine. Now, here's the next. You're talking about a disturbing one. Alcohol is the number one killer among teenagers. The Center for Science and the Public Interest estimates that children see 90,000 incidents of drinking on television by the age of 21. Now, next to heart disease and cancer, alcohol is the number one killer in the United States.
You know, that's a great hypocrisy, isn't it? Because we have people today who are saying, let's save the whales, save the condors. And we mentioned earlier that the Surgeon General said smoking is hazardous to one's health, and so they've taken that off of the television. It's not to be advertised anymore, and yet the greatest killer, non-disease killer among people is alcohol, and you cannot go a TV program without it being advertised time and time again. And these alcohol and beer commercials are getting more lascivious all the time. Now, I have an article here, and it's really sets forth the idea of how absurd we are when it comes to alcohol and its abuse. It's called The Intoxicated Cat. A letter in the newspaper was written by an unhappy woman who claimed that her husband thought it funny to make her pet cat drunk by pouring gin into its milk. The distressed woman complained that the cat would dance like mad, stagger around in circles, and finally fall in a heap in the corner and go to sleep. Besides, the cat was losing all of its hair as a result of this diet, and what would a cat look like without any hair? Immediately, letters poured into the newspaper from aroused readers over all the country denouncing the husband and suggesting various degrees of punishment for a man who would be so cruel to animals. Perhaps I have a warped sense of humor, but the reaction of the reader struck me ironically funny. Give an animal liquor, and you are cruel. Give a man liquor, and you are the life of the party. Let the animal reel and act foolish, fall in drunken stupor, and immediately readers will coast to coast howl in protest. Let a man act foolish, crash into an innocent family, and fall drunk in stupor, and we simply ignore it. You can't cause an animal's hair to fall out without protest, but you can cause a man's liver to rot out, and nobody says nothing. We shouldn't give liquor to pets. It's humane. But shouldn't we allow it to be given to our sons and daughters? Should we? Business associates and friends? Yet with all the advertising media at our command, we continually urge them to drink. My friends, if it's not fit for a dog or a cat, it's certainly not fit for human beings.
That's right.
You know, we live in a society where people really, really have a problem with being consistent with their beliefs. And this is one of those problems. I mean, the Bible tells us very clearly, and we looked at some of this last week, and Terry read a passage for us a moment ago about the evils of alcohol and those statistics that were given to us a moment ago. You know, even if the Bible didn't say anything about it, would that not be enough for us to want to stay away from those things, abstain from every appearance of evil? And yet our world tries to paint something evil as something good. Let me give you an example. I've got a sermon entitled Maggot Pie. And this sermon talks about how the devil likes to take something that's evil and make it look good. Let's just say, for example, we have a nice pie crust. And we take that pie crust and we cook it. You know, you cook the pie crust first, it's golden brown. And then inside of that pie crust, we're going to put maggots. And we're going to put a little sugar and cinnamon on them. And then we're going to put another pie crust on top of it, and we're going to cook it in the oven. And when it comes out, what does it look like?
It looks wonderful
and good. But you don't realize what's inside of it until you bite into it. You see, that's what the devil's doing. That's what this world is doing. That's what advertising is doing. They're taking something that is evil, that is bad, and they're painting it with a beautiful picture of women in bikini and strong men and things of that nature. And it's important for us to realize. You know, in Isaiah, for example, in Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20, Isaiah writes, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." Isn't that exactly what they're doing in our world today with painting the beautiful picture of the the woman in the bikini and drinking the alcohol and the men with a six-pack stomach and all of this. They're taking that which is evil and trying to make it look good. That's what our world's doing. That's the great hypocrisy that we're living in today.
It's amazing to me that when you consider the fact of what alcohol has done. You know, it's one thing. I know with cigarette smoking, yeah, they're secondhand smoke, okay. And I do believe it is hazardous to your health. But, you know, if I smoke, it's going to damage my health, and probably if I'm careful with it, may not affect anybody around me. Alcohol, Tom, if I'm drinking or somebody else is drinking, you know, I, as a minister, I've done a lot of funerals for people who weren't drinking, but somebody was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing about alcohol, look what it does to other people. Look what it does to families. Look what it does to innocent people. You know, it's and yet we see it personified as something that's fun, that's good, that's the party life, and it draws our young people. It draws adults. You know what I mean? The older people too, to that kind of lifestyle, and. It doesn't show the flip side of that, the heartache, the hurt, the destruction that it wreaks.
You know, we're talking about this alcohol situation tonight. Somebody might say, well, I thought y'all were talking about the social gospel. Why all the talk about alcohol? Well, this all got started because here recently in Stivenville, in the newspaper, they had an article how we need to stop underage drinking. And everybody's all excited. We need to stop underage drinking. But they drink underage because their parents are drinking. If it is not good for your kids to do it, it's not good for you to do it.
That's right.
You know, and that's true with so many things in life. You know, I'm going to watch a TV show. I don't want our kids to watch it. So y'all go to bed. This is not a kid's. This is not good for kids. Well, if it's not good for kids and you wouldn't want your kids to watch it, maybe you ought not to be watching it.
Amen.
And so when we're dealing with this issue of underage drinking and things of that nature, or drinking responsibly, you know, what we're doing is we're dealing with a symptom and not dealing with the real problem. And the problem is the drinking of alcohol, that which should not be done. The Bible condemns it. Now, Terry, there are a lot of people in our world today who claim that it's okay to drink because Jesus turned water into wine. Have you ever heard that argument?
Oh, all the time.
You know, that has to be probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, argument that so-called Christendom makes with regard to saying that it's all right for me to drink socially because Jesus turned water into wine. Terry, would you read for us John chapter 2, read verses 1 through 11, and then we're going to come back and make a couple of points throughout that text that's going to be important to our discussion at hand.
Start at verse 1. On the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Now both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. And when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to his servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Now therefore were set there six water pots of stone, according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast." And they took it. When the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine and did not know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master of the feast called the bridegroom. And he said to him, "Every man at the beginning sets out the good wine, and when the guests have well drunk, then the inferior. You have kept the good wine until now. This beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee has manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him."
You know, when we look at this passage here, there are a couple of things that are really stand out at us. First of all, the use of the word wine. Here, people automatically assume that the word wine is has reference to wine like we understand today, like a bottle of Thunderbird or some kind of thing, like it's a bottle of wine, wine as we think about it. But isn't it true, Terry, that when you use in Yahweh, the Hebrew word in the Old Testament, doesn't that word wine refer more to just alcohol beverage?
In Isaiah 65, verse 8, it talks about the wine in the cluster. And how does wine fit in a cluster? It is the grape, in the grape form.
Mm-hmm.
It also talks about the wine presses. Well, is it fermented when it's in the press? No, it's grape juice.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're called wine press. So, again, when you look at the way the Bible uses the word, it does not mean necessarily an intoxicant.
Exactly right. And so the first thing you've got to look at there is the context. Can you distinguish by the context if it's an alcohol or just pure grape juice? Now, even when you look at the context, you cannot always know if it's referring to alcohol or non-alcoholic, just pure grape juice. Now, what one thing is interesting here is that Jesus made this wine for the people of that day in that audience, in that wedding ceremony. But what does Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 15 say concerning that, Terry?
In Habakkuk 2, it tells us that we're not to... Well, let me find it here.
We're not to give strong drink to our neighbor, right?
That's right.
Now,
that's right.
And if Jesus gave strong drink to his neighbor, what was he involved in?
Sin.
The Bible commands, do not give strong drink to your neighbor. Let's turn over there for a moment. I want everybody to look at that, and that might be a good verse to write this here in John chapter 2. Write down Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 15, and you're going to see here, it says there, in Habakkuk 2, verse 15, woe unto them. Now, when he pronounces a woe, what is that?
That's not good.
That's a condemnation upon them.
Yes, a condemnation.
Them. Condemnation on them that giveth his neighbor drink, to thee that addeth thy venom and maketh him drunken also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. So it's important for us to realize the importance of this condemnation. Now, if Jesus provided for that group an alcoholic beverage, then he was guilty of violating Habakkuk 2 and verse 15. And since Jesus lived under the old law, he was amenable to Habakkuk 2 verse 15. And if he violated that, then he was guilty of sin, and he could not be our perfect sacrifice.
That's right. It's amen.
Now, that in and of itself ought to prove to us what?
That it was not intoxicated.
Exactly right.
And the thing that, you know, it doesn't even make sense that Jesus would serve a wine that was intoxicating, because what would it do to the people that was present if mm-hmm. it did cause them to get drunk? And then he'd be responsible for that kind of behavior. And he wouldn't, you know, the Bible condemns the reveling, you know, in Galatians mm-hmm. 5, the works of the flesh. Well, most of the time when these intoxicants are used, there's that kind of activity going on. Is Jesus going to be a part of that?
No, most definitely not. You know, when you look at also this context here, and you'll notice in John chapter 10, or John chapter 2 and verse 10, it says, every man, this man was talking when he saw that this wine was made, and they drank of it, and he said, every man seeth at first the good wine, and when men have drunken full freely, then that which is worse. Thou hast kept the good wine until now. Now, when you look throughout history, you're going to find that the people of that day considered the good wine, the best wine, to be pure grape juice. Now, in our society today, they would think the best wine is the one that has the most alcohol mm-hmm. in it. But that was not true of that day. And as a matter of fact, when you look into ancient history, you're going to find that when they did drink that which was of alcohol content, that it was usually mixed one-third to two-thirds, one-third alcohol to two-thirds of water, it was diluted down very much. And only the heathen, the worst scoundrels in the world, would ever drink pure alcoholic grape juice or things of that nature. And many times in the Old Testament, it was called what?
Strong drink.
Now, Jesus, therefore, did not make something that was going to cause people to stumble. He did not give them alcoholic beverages. That would be totally contrary to the will of God. Tonight, I want to remind you that we're airing on KTX 97.7 out of FM out of Eastland, KNNK 100.5 FM out of Hereford, KQMK 1680 AM out of Hydro, Oklahoma, and we're also airing on the Gospel Radio Network. We want to remind you also that you can sign up for our podcast of this program. If you'll go to the harrisonmoore.org webpage, you'll see the RSS feed at the bottom right-hand corner of the opening page, and you click on that, follow the directions, and then you can get a podcast of our programming. We want to remind you that this is a live call-in talk show. The number to call, if you'd like to get in with a discussion, with a question or comment, the number to call is 1-855-QA-BIBLE. That's 1-855-QA-BIBLE. And you can also get involved in the chat room. We have several, it looks to me like up to eight or so right now, from time to time on the chat box. We encourage you to be involved there, where you can listen in to the discussion that's going on or make a comment. We also want to remind you of our webpage. We have many. The Harrison Moore Expedition Through the Bible has been going for some 4 years now. 2 years previous with the Harris and Clark Expedition to the Bible. But there's lots of archived programs that Ryan Smithy has done for us on our webpage that you can look at. They are in topical order, so if you're looking for a special topic or interested in a topic, go there and see what you can find out. We also want to remind you of our additional sponsors. Sponsors in the Bangs Church of Christ, the De Leon Church of Christ, the Patrick Street Church of Christ in Dublin, the Rising Star Church of Christ, the Mount Vernon Church of Christ in Mount Vernon, the Ninth and Main Church of Christ in San Angelo, the Windmill Church of Christ in Weatherford, Texas, and also the Santo Church of Christ. And we want to thank these who are helping us get the word of the Lord out really throughout the whole world. We're talking tonight about the social gospel. And this social gospel, Terry, is really geared to deal with the social ills of our country. And that seems like a noble cause, doesn't it?
It sure does. The thing that I believe with all my heart is, you know, it may be well-intentioned, but this stuff is based on humanism, basically on a humanist concept of what's good and what's necessary and needed, not based on the Scripture and what God says we need. So a lot of times you're going to cross things up, especially when you look at the passage you read a moment ago about the evil man that calls crooked straight and the evil good. You know, that's kind of what we're faced with. And unfortunately, some of this social gospel falls in the same category as that we're talking about.
Okay. We have a question here on the chat box. Barry says, explain the Greek that is translated well drunk in John chapter 2 and verse 10. Well, there's two different ways of looking at that, and whichever way you look at it, it's not going to promote the argument. For one, some people believe that the Greek well drunk, or the American Standard says drunk freely. What does the New King James say over there in yours, in John chapter 2, verse 10?
It says drunk freely.
Uh-huh. Some people believe that this carries the idea of consumed all they could hold. They were full, right? And now, that would not add to or take away from any of our argument here. Now, think about this. if indeed that meant that they were drunk. These people were not drunk because they what? They could distinguish the difference between that which was the good wine and that which was not. He says they give them the good wine at first. This is the argument. They give them the good wine at first, and when they're good and drunk, then we give them the sorry wine because they're too drunk to know the difference. But these men right here were sober, and they knew that what was being served right now was the good wine, which was grape juice. And so the argument, whether or not you believe that they were drunk or whether or not you believe they were just willful, that plays no part whatsoever in regard to our argument. Frank, you got something to add to that?
Okay, the term there is not our English word drunk. Mm-hmm. When we use the word in English, we say someone is drunk, we're saying he's intoxicated. Mm-hmm. The Greek says they drank freely. Yeah. Simply means they had drunk freely of the beverage that they had, which was not intoxicating liquor.
Yeah. And it was never used for an intoxication.
Yeah. And so really the better translation, instead of well drunk, like the American Standard renders it, drunk freely. Yeah. They had all that they could to drink. And so, you know, that's what we have here in regard to this passage, which those people who want to try to find some passage that's going to teach it's all right for me to be involved in social drinking, what they're doing is looking for a passage to say that it's all right. Now, let's just give them their argument for a second. Even if this was talking about being drunk, it would not apply to the situation because these people were not drunk, because they could discern that what they were drinking right now was the good wine. And their argument was they give the alcohol first, and when we're good and drunk, then they give us a sorry wine. They could tell this was the good wine. They weren't drunk. But as Frank said, the Greek talks more to the idea of that they were full of wine, and this is grape juice, because we know that what? Jesus would not make something to cause people to stumble, to cause people to drink. Habakkuk 2, verse 15 condemns anyone who would give his neighbor drink to cause them to stumble, to cause them to be drunken. And that in and of itself is enough proof, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that this is not an intoxicating beverage. And anyone who would argue any differently is putting a shame on our Lord, who lived a perfect life without sin.
You know, this passage is a good illustration of what happens so much today when people go to a passage trying to make it say something they want. Mm-hmm. This is the same passage that one religious group uses, the Mormons, and they say this wedding feast was for Jesus. He was the bridegroom, and that he married Mary, Martha, and probably Mary Magdalene. Well, they don't get it from reading this chapter, but they try to put it there. Mm-hmm. The drunkard doesn't get being drunk from this passage, though he tries to put it there.
Yeah. And neither does a man have, does this prove it's all right for a person to be involved in social drinking.
That's right.
Now, we know the Bible condemns it through various passages. How many times does the Bible talk about, and we looked at a lot of these last week, about being sober?
Correct.
Now, the word sober does not always refer to alcohol, but it means to be in your right mind. And it's proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that alcohol hinders your thought process. Various drugs, marijuana, and all these other types of drugs hinder your thinking process, therefore losing sobriety. And so, beyond a shadow of a doubt, this is condemned in the Bible. You know, we're already, time is flying, and I want to mention something here. You know, even the world knows the real truth about intoxicants, but they just refuse to admit it until it's too late. Many people may remember a singer, one of the most successful entertainers of his day, a man by the name of James Brown. Intoxicants first destroyed him as a performer, and then later they killed him. Now, before he died, he wrote one more song. a song to try to educate the world, and most probably inadvertently, to what God has been telling us all along. And the title of this song is King Heroin. He says, "I came to this country without a passport. Ever since then I've been hunting and sought. My little white grains are nothing but waste, soft and deadly and bitter to taste. I'm a world of power, and all know it's true. Use me once, and you'll know it too. I can make a mere schoolboy forget his books. I can make a world-famous beauty neglect her looks. I can make a good man forsake his wife, send a greedy man to prison for the rest of his life. I can make a man forsake his country and flag, make a girl sell her body for $5 bag. Some think my adventure's a joy and thrill, but I put a gun in your hand and make you kill. In cellophane bags I found my way to heads of state and children at play. I'm financed in China, ran in Japan. I'm respected in Turkey. I'm legal in Siam. I take my addicts and make them steal, borrow, and beg. Then they search for a vein in their arm or their leg. So be you Italian, Jewish, black, or mix, I can make the most vile of men forget their sex. So now, know, my man, you must, you know, do your best to keep up your habit until you arrest. Now the police have taken you from under my wing. Do you think they dare defy me? I am king. Now you must lie in the county jail, where I can't get to you by visitor mail. So squirm with discomfort, wiggle and cough. 6 days of madness, ha! You might throw me off. Curse me in name, defy me in speech, but you'd pick me up right, no, if I were in your reach. All through your sentence you become resolved to your fate. Here now, young man and woman, I'll be waiting at the gate. Don't be afraid, don't run, I'm not chased. Sure, my name is Heroin, you'll call me back for a taste. Behold, you're hooked, your foot in a stirrup, and make haste. Mount the steed and ride him well, for the white horse Heroin will ride you to hell. To hell will ride you to hell, until you're dead, dead, brother, dead. This is a resolution of the mind. Get your mind together and get away from drugs. That's the man. Back, back." You see, although James Brown was talking about heroin, this very same thing is true of alcohol. Alcohol gets a hold on us. It can destroy our lives. And we've got to realize the importance and what alcohol can do to our lives.
Exactly.
You know, we talked about here with regard to the social gospel, how that some people try to use let's stop underage drinking, and they make that their focus in life, their religion in life. I am focused to try to stop teenagers from drinking, but they're only dealing with the symptom and not the problem. You see, that's what social gospel is all about. They try to pick one subject, one good to be involved in. They want to be involved in that, and yet they're omitting the other parts of the gospel. And we think about the social gospel. There are a lot of people who are involved in such things as the United Way or the Red Cross or the Salvation Army, and they're involved in those efforts. And what do they think, Terry?
They think they're doing good. They think that these organizations are accomplishing some things that maybe through their combined finances that as an individual they can't do. But the problem of it is, if you study and find out exactly what the percentage that is being spent by these individuals in doing good compared to what's being pocketed by the upper echelon of the individuals or the upkeep or the market, you'll find out that very little of the money that you contribute to these individuals are going to help people.
You know, noticing, backing up just a fuzz to this wine issue again, Pedro on the webpage says, Was the wine at the Passover meal wine or grape juice? Well, let me answer it this way. It was wine, but it was grape juice. Mm-hmm. Because they were condemned from drinking alcoholic beverages. You see, that's where our mentality, when we think of wine, what do we automatically think in our day? We automatically think alcohol. But the Hebrew people, the Jewish people, the Roman people, when they referred to, when they said wine, it was not always alcohol beverage. To say drinking grape juice is wine, and Denny makes an important point. Pedro, they have removed leaven from their household of that week, and that would that remove the alcohol
same
content.
As fermentation, that's right.
So you can't have fermentation without leaven, and so that's another good argument. But even if you didn't know any of those tricky things like that or any of the scientific methods of the Bible condemns it, then you know what? It's not going to be used for some ceremony with regard to worshiping our God if God condemns it. And even today, some people say, well, why can't we use alcoholic wine in our communion today? Well, because Jesus did not use it. And why did Jesus not use it? Well, because it was condemned in the Bible, and we ought not to have a part of that.
Tom? And that goes back to what we talked about in John 2. If you look at Habakkuk 2, when Jesus was with the disciples in the Last Supper, when they enjoyed the Passover feast, think about that. Doesn't Habakkuk 2 relate there also?
Most definitely.
Would he provide alcohol to his disciples?
Mm-hmm.
No, he wouldn't. And it's, the same thing applies there that would apply to... John 2.
Exactly right. And so anybody who drinks alcohol and think that they can say, well, Jesus turned water into wine and that there's nothing wrong with alcohol, they don't realize what alcohol can do to you. Not only
That's
is
right.
it condemned in the Bible, and we've already looked at many passages about this, and you can always, for more information, if you would like more information on it, and I have bukus. I don't know if bukus is a real word or not. But if you want more information about the evils of alcohol and Bible condemnation of it, if you will email me, you can email me at questions, QUESTIONS, at harrisonmoore.org, and that email will go to my email address, to David's email address, and we'll be happy to give you all the information that you want concerning that. So it's very easy to prove that alcohol provides nothing good for you. People say, well, you know, the doctor says that, you know, if we drink a little red wine at night, that's good for you. Well, my wife is a nurse practitioner, and she knows a little bit about medicine and things of that nature. She says that red grape juice does the very same thing does a bottle of, I don't even know what, wine. All I know is I heard somebody say Thunderbird one time. But, you know, cheap, you know, but grape juice, red grape juice does the very same thing, and so you don't need the alcoholic content. Not only that, it impairs your thinking after one drink. It's not good for your liver. I had a friend that I grew up with, and he was about 2 years younger than me, and he flat drank himself to death. We don't know the evils that are associated with alcohol. There are some things we know beyond a shadow of a doubt. Carol says, many people who would not consider using illegal drugs because of the related problems fail to recognize that the problems are the same and equally detrimental regard to drugs and alcohol. Alcohol can also is not good for your heart, blood pressures, and things of that nature. If it's not good for the fetus, how good can it be for us? But we do what? We do what we want to do.
Exactly. Why do you think that is? I mean here's the deal. Why do you think that men here, it be just as social to drink a cup of coffee or a glass of tea, and sure a lot less controversial, but why do you think men would do that?
Well, you know, let's be honest. A Dr. Pepper tastes a lot better than those stinking nasty beer.
You are.
Why do they drink it?
Exactly.
Because they want to get their mind altered.
Exactly.
And that is not being sober. Now, why do they do it when the Bible condemns it? You know, we were talking, Frank put a passage to our mind earlier today, and really it's a powerful verse. It talks, well, Frank, why don't you tell us a little bit about that passage there? I'll give you a couple of minutes there to talk about that passage there in 1 Kings at chapter 14 and verse 9, and what led up to the statement there.
The statement made in 1 Kings 14, verse 9, was God speaking through the prophet to the wife of King Jeroboam. Jeroboam was the king of the northern kingdom of Israel. In chapter 11, there is the discussion there as to why he became king, and even the promise that God made to him of how he would bless him as king and would give him 10 of the 12 tribes. By the time we get to chapter 14, the prophet now is going to tell him of the condemnation that God is going to bring upon him that is going to result in the death of his children and the loss of his kingdom. He will no longer be king, nor will those in his family be king. And the reason in verse 9 was because, God said, because you cast me behind your back. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that is obvious about that when you think about it is every time you look at something that God told Jeroboam to do, in effect, Jeroboam would say, God, you get behind me because this is what I want to do. He chose two different cities rather than Jerusalem. God's command was Jerusalem, but he would say, God, you stay behind me because this is what I want. He changed the priests from the tribe of Levi to the men of Israel. He changed the date of the time of worship. Again and again, he made changes, and God described it as by simply saying, because you place me behind your back. Mm-hmm. And this is what man is doing today. We know what God said. We know what God teaches. We know what it does. And in effect, men are still saying, God, this is what I want to do. You stay behind me.
Exactly. And that fits in perfectly with regard to alcohol that we've been talking about. God has clearly condemned it, and yet we put God's commandments behind our back and do rather what we want to do. And this also directly applies to the social gospel. What we do is pick out one or two things we are interested in, what we like, and everything else that God says we ought to be involved in, we put behind our back, and we put all our focus into, let's stop underage drinking. Or in a situation where David brought this to my attention earlier when I was talking to him, everybody's heard of the Habitat for Humanity, right? This thing's going for some 30 years, and Jimmy Carter is a big proponent of this, and we put all of our – we're building houses for people who don't have enough money to build their own house. Well, that's a noble cause, right? But if that's your total focus in religion, look at all of the other things in life that you're missing. And not only that, how much money do you think it cost people who put money in that to protect the president? I mean, to ex-president Jimmy Carter. You've got – some have estimated up to $400,000 a day. When you got Secret Service, all these men protecting him, their plane traveling from place to place, the hotels, the food, that's a lot of money being spent in the name of Habitat for Humanity. And what this does, in reality, is that it's glorifying Jimmy Carter.
Exactly.
Now, anything that we're to be involved in regard to benevolence and things of that nature, it's to be done in the church.
That's right.
You know, there's nothing wrong with being involved in a Lions Club or things of that nature or a Kiwanis Club. But if we try to make that our religion, then we've done wrong. And the benevolence that we really want to do, should we not want to do it through the church so that God gets the glory? Is to be done through the church. Is that not right?
The most important work that there is all of the social gospel deals with the social issues. The real work is, hey, this is what we need. We need Jesus Christ. We need men to believe in Him. Now, you're talking about something that'll change the world. Tom, Habitat for Humanity is not going to change the world.
No.
Salvation Army is not going to change the world. The only thing that's going to change the world is a man's faith in Jesus Christ and his obedience to Him. That's the only thing that's really going to make the changes.
You know, when we think about, again, this social gospel, what people are doing is picking and choosing what they are interested in, what they
that's
like.
Right.
And this not only has to do with regard to stop underage drinking or Habitats for Humanity. What we find also in the denominational world is they will pick and choose doctrines that they are concerned about and focus on those things. You know, we got people today, some of our Jehovah's Witness friends, they like to talk about the end of days, you know, in Revelation. If you were to ask them, well, what do you teach about salvation and baptism? They don't know anything about
That's
that. Right. They know a lot about Revelation, but they don't know anything about anything else in the Bible. What they have done is the social gospel, in essence. They've chosen a certain area, eschatology, that mm-hmm. they're interested in, and they have neglected everything else in the Bible. That's being treating religion like a cafeteria, going through and picking and choosing what you like. And by the way, in passing, I want you to realize that the United Way and the Red Cross, though they claim to be benevolent organizations that help out people, there is a, and you look it up and you do some research, there's a very small percentage of the money that actually goes to them that actually goes to those who have need, because
right.
a lot of it goes to clerical work and salaries. And I don't know, I've heard one time like only 10% of every dollar that's sent goes to the actual victim, and the rest of it goes to the people doing the work. And then one final thing, and we're just about out of time. You hear a lot about Salvation Army and the good works they've done. The Salvation Army is a religious organization. Don't give your money to them. They're a religious organization, and we need to realize as God's people, let's give, allow our efforts to be done through the church. And let's not be involved in this social gospel where we go through and pick and choose what we want. Let's keep the whole counsel of God.
Amen.
Give us a couple last words before we close here, Terry.
I just want to use one passage in closing, 2 Peter 1, verse 3. God hath granted us all things pertaining to life and godliness. That covers it all.
Mm-hmm.
The way to become a Christian and the way we should live as a Christian, what we need to do.
Exactly. Appreciate Terry being with us, filling in for us tonight for David. And I want to remind you to please pray for David, that he gets back on his feet very soon. We want to thank those who have got onto the chat box. Looks like at present time we had as many as 8 to 10 people on the chat box. We're thankful that you've been there. We want to thank Frank always for doing such a good job on helping us in this regard. And we want to remind you that you've heard what Minna had to say. Now let's listen to what the Bible has to say. You have been listening to the Harrison Moore Expedition Through the Bible.